Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, December 6th. I'm Ray Graff. Our favorite bird experts are back. Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart are here to answer your questions. To take part of the discussion today, give us a call, 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551 is the number. Frankly, it's been tough. The last couple of minutes we've been lawyering this show, and apparently, Rich wants to work some blue material, so I've been running through all the words he's not allowed to say coming up, but it's going to be very exciting. Well, you can email as well, voxpop@wamc.org. 800-348-2551 is the number. The program is lawyered. It's protected for you. We'll be ready to talk some birds coming up after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We're discussing birds once again today. And while we do that, we welcome back Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart. Rich is retired from the New York State DEC. He's now the regional reviewer for the premier birding site, eBird. Julie Hart is the project coordinator for the New York Breeding Bird Atlas. She coordinates with thousands of volunteers to document bird breeding behaviors. She has a focus on bird conservation and citizen science. You got a birding question? Call 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551 with your bird calls, or email voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org is the email address. The number is 800-348-2551. Richard P. Guthrie, how are you, buddy?
Hey, doing great, Ray. Thanks.
You were decked out in camouflage today.
You can't see me, can you?
Did you bring your AK-47?
At negatory.
Okay, that's good. Julie Hart, welcome back. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm not wearing camouflage.
No, but you have a black top on. You're kind of like Moomin Shots. Got to be honest with you.
Okay.
All right. You saw a flicker.
Yeah, we the last few days we've been having a northern flicker, which is one of our probably lesser known woodpeckers that we have in New York State, and it's been actually coming to our feeders and
that's
eating
rare?
The suet. Yes, and so that's fairly unusual. They often don't even come into your backyard that often. If they do, they'll be on the ground, kind of rooting around in the soil. But this one seems to be has figured out how to eat the suet, and it is, it's quite
nice.
Happy at our house. So it's quite nice.
Rich is holding the picture up, so I know what we're talking about here. So is it just a really exceptionally smart flicker that figured out the mechanics of how to feed, or is it just a rare one
so.
Who stumbled upon it?
No, I think a lot of the flickers, they move south for the winter.
Yeah.
So this one hasn't left. I mean, a few of them stick around, but this one has stuck around. And we get quite a bit of a commotion at our feeders. And so the first day that it came in, it was just kind of like looking around, and it was very skittish and not quite sure what to do. But he sat in the trees and he just watched the other watched the other woodpeckers at the suet, and then he tried it, and now he's like got the hang of
it. Hooked.
And he's like, yeah, he's like, this is good stuff.
But Rich, this flicker will eventually move on, right?
Maybe, maybe not. They're pretty hardy, and some of them do spend the winter here. We're at the northern extreme of their winter range.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it's a local guy or gal, it could be one that came down from further north, and this is it, maybe. You know, Miami for you.
All right. This email came in from Dawn, way back when. Will you please recommend a good product to affix to my windows to avoid bird strikes? Well, I'm glad we're getting this out of the way early in the show, because we talk about it at least once a show.
Yeah. It's such a tragedy. So many birds fly into windows, and it breaks my heart to see new architecture go up with these highly reflective windows as walls,
yeah,
as the edifice of the it looks like sky, it looks like trees, it looks like the pond that they put out there as an ornament, and the birds just say, I'm in. And unfortunately, it's oftentimes it's fatal. And if not, they're stunned, they have head injuries, and they may not ever fully recover. They lose their senses of an ability to act quickly to avoid trouble. So, I recommend checking out the American Birding Conservation, ABC, for their recommendations. There are a number of products that you can affix to a window and in a certain pattern that is effective in deterring the birds from flying in. It basically, to the birds, it's not visible to us. It's mostly invisible to us, but it reflects an ultraviolet image to the birds, which they can see. And it's like flying into a spider web for the birds. They don't want to fly through a spider web. They've been there, done that. We've done that, and it's messy. So
You've done that?
Oh, many times. It's a spider web, and you have wiping it away from your glasses and what have you.
Nice.
But in any event, yes, American Bird Conservancy has some high recommendations. I don't want to steal their thunder. There's a lot of information that's out there about that. That was more effective than I can present.
Okay. Mm-hmm. This email from Lou in Old Chatham. Lou, I saw a really cool thing this year a little earlier in the fall, about a month ago. I could hear it before it arrived, and it was a river of birds in the sky. It took about 4 minutes from start to finish. Probably starlings, A mix of birds, They were small and noisy, Were they on the edge? Were on the edge of the Taconic Mountains. I imagine they were riding some kind of updraft. Does this sort of thing have a name? Is it murmuration? This is from Lou in Old Chatham.
Well, murmuration is kind of limited to the starlings, and this sounds like it's more than starlings, and it's called migration.
Okay.
Yes. And basically, blackbirds, the grackles, the red-winged blackbirds, the cardinals, and the starlings get caught up in the action, and they do migrate as a large black river of birds.
Cool.
And they're noisy. They're calling back and forth to one another, and they are also daytime migrants. Most birds migrate at night. These guys are out there broad daylight. You can't miss them when it's happening. And I enjoy seeing it. The ribbons of birds flowing through the air.
4 minutes, that sounds like a really big,
a lot of birds.
Big group. That sounds really amazing.
Would have been great for the old bird count, huh? Count all those.
1, 2, 3, 5, 20, 50.
Right. Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart are here. We're talking birds on the program. 800-348-2551. Let's grab a call or two before the first break. We'll go down to, I believe it's Vineland, New Jersey, not Vinland, but Vineland. Rich, you're on.
Hi, good afternoon, guys.
Hey,
Rich, I got a couple of questions for you about Merlin. The first one is, if you were to imitate a grain horde owl or a Bob White into Merlin, would Rich Guthrie pop up on the screen, or would the bird pop up on the screen?
Good luck with that. No. And by the way, I've tried doing that, tried to fool Merlin.
Yeah.
And most of the time it doesn't work. My best great horned owl comes out as dog barking.
Really?
No kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Well, my more serious question about Merlin is I started using it recently because some friends had said it was actually working quite well. And it will show up, like I'll be standing around, and it'll say there's a brown creeper nearby or very often a downy woodpecker. Now, as far as I know, downy woodpeckers pretty much don't make any sound except that chatter that they make, and I've never hear anything. But most of the time I will see a brown creeper or a downy woodpecker, so I'm thinking, you know, Merlin's hearing something that I can't hear. And when I look at the sonogram, it just looks like background noise.
Mm-hmm.
So how reliable is Merlin for something like that? I won't write it down for my eBird list unless I actually see the bird.
Well,
but
good
I'm
for
just
you.
Curious what you think about how accurate Merlin is for stuff like that.
Very, very, very accurate. I rely on
it
to let me know what's there that I haven't heard. And there's quite a few of those that I can't hear. Merlin tips me off that, hey, there's cedar waxwings. Check it out.
Yeah.
And then I scan around,
I
and there they are.
Too. Yeah. Yep.
And sometimes, Merlin will say things that just aren't real. And, it has a pretty good imagination. So always, and as you do, I recommend always, verify. Trust but verify.
Ah, yes. What was it, Ronald Reagan?
Ronald Reagan.
Do you think it's best practice would be not to just rely on Merlin saying there was a there was a creeper, unless I actually can spot it. Do you think that would be best practice for my list?
Well, you know, sometimes I go and say, yeah, there's another white-throated sparrow. I can do that. But if it comes up with a golden-crowned sparrow, it ain't going to happen until I get a photo.
Julie, do you use the Merlin as well?
I'm doing it.
Julie Hart, do you use that? Yes. I was asking Julie if she also uses Merlin.
Yeah, we recommend people to use Merlin as well for the Breeding Bird Atlas because there are so many of us that are losing our hearing and we may not even realize it.
I'm in that group.
And it's really helpful, as you said, to like really key in on some of these birds that either you've just tuned out, like a blue jay or a crow. Maybe you just hear them all the time and so you're just not paying attention, or you literally just can't hear them.
You know, I have, Rich, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. I just, before we take a break here, we know, we've talked about the range of frequencies the birds see, but do we know what range they hear? In other words, a good set of human ears might hear 20 hertz to 20,000 hertz. Do the birds go subsonic or ultrasonic in their hearing range?
Sure do.
Yeah.
And,
well, Merlin picked that up.
Merlin does pick that up. Mm-hmm. It's very good at that. And I'm not talking about my own personal range of hearing, because I've lost some of the higher frequencies
to 100.
But some of the other ones that are out there, for example, the middle part of the song of the winter wren is inaudible to us. It's such a high frequency.
Oh, that's interesting.
But that's part of their song. And then some of the subtle tunes in the song of some of the thrushes, like the wood thrush and the like, they get. And they respond to it. So we have to go by the evidence that we can observe.
That's so cool. I mean, I remember some psychedelic group from the 60s. I don't know, it was the Dead or somebody, recording birds and slowing them down.
That was Dr. Allen from Cornell University who did that. And I remember as a kid, I used to go to the library and listen to the LP-78s. And it was remarkable, the sounds of these birds that he slowed down to 1/4 speed.
Mm.
And actually, you know what it sounds like? It sounds like the whales in the ocean. The recording of whale sounds.
So you speed the whales up.
I think so. And you could get a wood thrush to fly in.
Oh, my gosh. This is getting to be like Woodstock. We got to take a break here. hey, listen, watch out for the brown stuff. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Birds Today. Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart. We'll be back. Vox Pop, it's Birds Today with Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. And this is the time of the year when Rich Guthrie gets that list. He checks it twice and then runs it down at 220, or in this case, 222. What do you got, Rich?
Hey, we got a lot going on out there right now, but it's all boiled down into one small kettle. And that's Christmas bird counts.
Ooh, exciting.
Yes. So in our listening area, there are roughly about 50 different Christmas bird counts that all are invited to participate, join up. And to find out one near you, I recommend going to the Audubon Society website. Just Google Christmas bird count near you. And you'll get a map of the United States, and you could zoom in on New York, and you could zoom in on the Hudson Valley in Massachusetts or Vermont, and you'll see little circles. You click on that little circle on that digital map, and it'll tell you who to contact and get you going.
Pretty exciting. And this, a rookie or a novice could do this?
Oh, more than welcome. And it's one of those things that we will all look forward to every year, because you get together and you have, this opportunity to participate in a science that's real. And it's been going on for well over 100 years, and the cumulative data on the Christmas bird counts is invaluable, and you can be a part of it.
Why do it at Christmas, Rich?
Well, that it goes back to the old tradition of Victorian era and before, where they would go out after Christmas dinner, or perhaps while a turkey is in the oven or doing whatever, and just shoot as many different birds and animals as they could. It's kind of like a horrible kind of tradition. And some real good people got together and said, wait a minute, stop the killing. Let's just count them. Let's look for them and count them and say, and compare notes. And it became something of a little intercity competition between bird activists, activists in Boston, New York City, Chicago, Pittsburgh, Philadelphia. And it grew from there, from 1900 onward. And it grew. Now it's Canada, United States, the Caribbean islands, Central and South America. It's such a wonderful thing.
How is the you're kind of slowing down on the breeding bird atlas at this time of year, Julie Hart?
Yeah, it's kind of a slow time of year for us. There's not a whole lot of species that are attempting to breed, but there are a few species that you can keep an ear out for on the Christmas bird counts.
Yeah.
And you can submit observations on those to the Breeding Bird Atlas. And those would be things like the great horned owls. They've started courting already, so you might hear them doing their duets.
What do they sound like?
Oh, it's pretty, it's just like a very generic whoo, whoo, whoo.
Okay.
Some other species are also getting ready to breed again as well. So they might be like repairing their nest, or like bald eagles, you might see them carrying sticks around and working on their nest. And then a lot of the waterfowl, you'll see them courting this time of year as well. So there's still some things happening, but it's not like, you know, prime season.
When is prime season?
Prime season is June and July.
Okay.
Yeah.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart here. Did you have anything else on your list there, Mr. Rich?
I did. I just wanted to mention a couple of opportunities. If somebody were interested in going to see the birds of Cuba,
oh, yeah.
Here's your chance. Birds Caribbean, which is a not-for-profit advocacy group for the conservation of bird habitats in the Caribbean islands, is taking a trip to Cuba.
Oh, cool.
In January and March. Now, go to find Birds Caribbean online and get the details, but it is filling up fast.
What is the website?
It is birdscaribbean.org.
And you've done this before.
I did, and they're a wonderful group of people. They have a wonderful local guide that helps you out, and they know their stuff. And it's for preserving some of these habitats that's quickly disappearing on these Caribbean islands. Cuba is one of the premier spots, but they also, you know, advocate for some of the smaller islands. And the other thing is, this one I'm going to start out with a little bit of poetry from John Ashbery.
Okay.
This is, even when they wing against the trees in bright formation, you know the peace they brought was long overdue. And this is to promote a flowchart foundation to get together that's going to be celebrating the poetry and art of John Ashbery. And it's going to be in Hudson, New York, 348 Warren Street in Hudson, December 11th, between 3 and 5 p.m.
That's nice.
Sunday afternoon, between 3 and 5, a nice get-together of people who appreciate the poetry, the art, the beauty, and the outdoors.
All right. Well, barring any other additions to our list, Julie, you have anything else?
No.
Rich?
The John Bowes Natural History Society is having a holiday get-together December 11th.
Aha!
John Bowes Natural History Society in Kingston, New York.
Do you go to that one?
I will try to go to that one, yeah. But I've got this other thing in Hudson that I got to work, you know, I want to be at.
All right.
It's a little conflict of time and so many interests.
I know, Rich. Well, you're a man who is in demand. Let's go back to our phone lines here. We'll go to Kelly and Troy. Kelly, you're on.
Hi, I have a question about the crows in Troy. Recently, the mayor put out a statement that they were going to, you know, they noticed the gathering of crows in Troy, and they were going to work with the Department of Agriculture to try to disperse them. I, for one, thoroughly enjoy the crows. I would love to make friends with them.
Me too. I'm with you there.
You know, Yeah. There's been a lot of destruction of habitats to put up all of these, you know, on Starbuck Island, for example, they put up all these box apartments and stuff. So I was just wondering, maybe a conversation or just some more thoughts on the crows of Troy.
Well, they do. Crows traditionally have their winter gathering places. And Troy is the has the distinction of having one of the larger ones. And they come from, these are overwintering crows. Some of them come in from far, yeah, and some of them are here all year round. But they all get together in the evening and spend the night together. It's a wonderful thing, except if you happen to live underneath that tree where they're all roosting in. It's not something that is very endearing. I hope you live near a car wash.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, the city of Troy and to some extent other cities have taken measures to discourage the crows from roosting in the city during the winter. And although I appreciate your concern, don't worry about them. The crows will be fine. They'll find another place to gather together and leave the people in Troy alone.
Kelly, thanks for the call. Julie, you want to weigh in on that?
No, I mean, I think that roost is really impressive, and it does move around on its own as well. So I have no worries that it will find somewhere else to go. But if you enjoy watching the crows, I recommend finding somewhere right at dusk to go and watch them just stream in from all directions. It's really impressive.
All right, we go to Hillsdale, and Irene, you're on. What's going on? Irene.
Yeah, I'm here. I've got my hands deep in turkey broth.
Ah, well, good for you. All right, well.
We're coming over.
Welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi. So I think I might have seen the same migration of birds that fellow from Old Chatham was talking about. Did he say he saw it like maybe October or September? No, it would have to be September.
Yes.
Do you remember?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So we saw them, too, in Hillsdale, and they were coming from north. Old Chatham is north of us. And I don't think they were starlings. In fact, at first, our first guess was that they were like barn swallows, right? But they weren't, I don't think, because the undersides looked yellow.
Hmm.
Does that give you any information?
No, that's.
They were high up. They were high up, and there were lots. I haven't seen that kind of migration up here since I've been here 30 years.
Well, Irene, I don't think they were barn swallows, and I do think they were blackbirds.
No, I don't think so. And yeah, I don't think they were barn swallows either because the coloring on the on the breast, but I didn't know what they could be.
I'm going to go with the blackbirds. Maybe it was light angle, a reflection from. An oblique light angle that was causing a distortion of the color. So I'm going to stick with the blackbirds. Okay. The timing is right, and that's how they do it.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah. I had looked it up in online Cornell, but they didn't say there were any migrations happening at that time. But that doesn't mean anything, I know.
Okay. Very nice.
Yeah, okay.
I think you're in
great.
On it.
All right, Irene, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's Birds Today with Julie Hart and Rich Guthrie. This email from Tim in Fulton County. It's my understanding that meadow bird numbers are in decline. Any pointers on addressing this problem on a hay farm? Producing good quality hay requires mowing early and often, which disrupts the nesting season for the birds. I've been experimenting with leaving some areas unmowed till later in the summer to allow at least some of the young birds to survive. And that is from Tim in Fulton County.
Yeah, that's exactly right. There's a huge, huge documented decline in all of the grassland birds. It's the group of birds that are declining the most right now. And it is there's direct conflict between having really high quality hay versus providing that habitat for the birds.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, if you can leave parts of your field unharvested, if you can spread that time out between mowings, if you can wait until August, I mean, there are things that you can do, but there is some decline in the hay quality.
Interesting.
As you make some of those changes. But, you know, in the past, there have been monetary funds that have been available to help offset some of the profits that you're losing, but I'm not aware of any right now.
Vermont has some programs up there. Check with the people up in Vermont.
Yes.
And that may be imitated around New York State as well.
Yeah.
But you know, this is kind of like a cooperative effort on the part of some of the farmers and the conservation groups.
All right, this is from Tig. I saw a hawk unsuccessfully attack birds at a feeder. When I looked it up, it could have been a Cooper's hawk or a sharpshin. The source said that even experienced birders can have trouble distinguishing the two. Before genetic testing, were these considered one species? Are there defining characteristics for each?
Yes, they are. They have long been considered separate species because there are physiological differences between the Cooper's and sharpshin hawk and their relatives around the world. It's an interesting aspect of the occipital hawks, where there are larger and smaller relatives of very similar-looking birds. And Cooper's and sharpshin hawk, again, they have different courtship and nesting requirements and also different morphological features.
Aha. Uh-huh. All right. I lost my email here. Hang on. One more email, and then we'll go back to the phones. Here we go. This is from Andy. I was recently in a suburb of Atlanta, which is densely populated but does have several small wooded undeveloped greenways that homes back up on. We visited a home in one such neighborhood, and toward evening, the homeowner played a barred owl call over his Bluetooth, and in a couple minutes, three owls turned up in the trees and started hooting back. I was concerned that this was not a good practice, primarily in the wild, but in a semi-urban environment, is it harmful to the birds?
Yes and no. Mm-hmm. And I've been to that park in Atlanta, and I know the barred owl and the red-shouldered hawk in these urban and suburban parks are very people tolerant. They have become accustomed to being around people day and night. They often go unnoticed. Now, the practice of playing bird songs, bird calls, bird territorial indicators can be very harmful to birds during the nesting season and during this time of year when the owls are setting up their overwinter territory.
Yeah.
And competition for overwinter food becomes a little bit of a concern for them. But moderation, so far, is tolerable. In some places, it's prohibited because it's so frequently visited by people and they don't want to overdo the bird call playback. But moderation, and it's a tool that we use when we're doing atlasing or surveys of that sort to check the presence and then move on. Bottom line is, I always say, let the little guy win. Let him be the king of the hill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you use that occasionally, Julie, when you're out doing your thing?
Sometimes for research purposes, it can be extremely effective to bring in birds that otherwise you wouldn't be able to tell were there. But we do generally, like for the Breeding Bird Atlas, we generally advise that you don't use playback or you use it very minimal. As soon as you get any response, you stop playing the playback because it can be very stressful for those birds.
To find some of the secretive birds during the winter months, however, if you're out there doing a Christmas bird count, you suspect there may be a catbird or a chat in a bush that you can't see because they are secretive. If you do a playback and they pop up to say, "Who's there? Hi there, honey." And that, you know, just end it at that. You know, sorry to disappoint, but yeah. Goodbye.
All right, let's end it at that. Let's go to the calls, and we go to Red Hook. Harold, you're on, Harold.
Yes, good afternoon. Ladies, gentlemen, how are you?
Great.
Listen, years ago, in my quest for grandfather clocks in Cotswolds in England, I had the opportunity to purchase a minor bird.
I see.
Who was trained, highly trained. I bought the minor bird, who had a British accent. He is, no, it's not funny.
Okay. Right,
he was
Harold.
Trained in Britain.
Okay, I got it.
And his diet was a clear broth with a matzo ball. Now, this particular minor bird was able to mimic Vincent Price. And his specialty was the speech that Mr. Price had given in the opening scene of the fall of the House of Usher, where Mr. Price and Fauntleroy would say the following: "Arthur, fetch me another cocktail. Now, I'm going to hang up and listen for the discussion.
Harold,
thank you.
It is wonderful to hear from you again, and happy Thanksgiving and happy holidays to you. We'll talk to you perhaps in the new year or maybe even the year after that. It's Birds with Rich Guthrie at Julie Hart. We'll be right back. Harold, it's Vox Pop, it's Birds. Zach the engineer, not happy with Harold, but we're always happy to hear from Harold on this program. Rich Guthrie, Julie Hart, love to talk Birds with you. And let's go right back to our phone lines and to our pal Joan in Schenectady. Joan.
Hello to everyone. And I did enjoy the bumper music, so sorry, Zach.
No, he likes the bumper music.
Hey,
He's not so fond of Harold, that's all.
Ah, okay. All right. I was dancing.
Yeah, good.
Quietly,
yeah.
Waiting for the phone to come back. Hey, anyway, I want to clear up a couple. I want to make sure I spoke truth, and I want to make sure I've heard truth. My neighbors caught the image of there were two hawks, probably red tails. One was making itself very comfortable on a chair I had in the backyard. And I said, two of them together, they're probably migrating. Is cast the right word for two hunting hawks?
Hunting, did you say?
I thought that a cast. I've heard a cast of hawk or a cast of whatever is two hunting birds.
Uh-huh.
But at any rate, I wondered if they were traveling together, so I hope that was true. And I also had a question about something that was said about food for songbirds. It might be true, so I want to make sure I do the right thing. I sometimes do feed our songbird collection breadcrumbs, like well-toasted breadcrumbs. And my bread is mostly gluten-free, seeds, grains. I mean, it looks to me like bird food anyway.
Yeah.
Is that safe for them?
Yes. Yes, no problem. That's a urban myth or an old country tale, and birds are perfectly
great.
Birds are fine with bread.
Okay, fair enough.
Right, good. And that was probably the two red tails were probably catching a quick snack in the yard and moving on. Another urban myth. Everybody's worried about their small dogs in the neighborhood because of the hawks we have in our area. Is that another urban myth?
Yes and no. I wouldn't worry about them. However, letting your dog out at night if there is a great horned owl around depends. If you have a real small dog, it fits right into the catch range of a great horned owl. So, walk with your dog. Keep them close. Mm. Short leash.
Joan, thanks a lot for the call. I remember, I've told you this story before, we're out with all the neighborhood kids when all the neighborhood kids were little, and we're outside on the street playing ball. And over the neighbor's house, it was broad daylight, this huge owl with a rabbit or something in its beak. And, I mean, the rabbit was almost as big as the bird. It was huge.
Yes. And they are a powerful, powerful bird.
All right, to our buddy Merle in Argyle. Hello, Merle.
Hello, how you guys doing?
All right, Merle, good afternoon.
What's up, man?
This is sort of sad news.
Uh-oh.
So, I make a trip down from Glens Falls to Clifton Park once a week. And the last 2 weeks, I've noticed a lot of, I counted at least five carcasses of which could be owls or small hawks along the side of the road. Is anybody, DEC, or anybody trying to figure out some way to deter roadkill?
Afraid not, Merle.
No.
Along the 87.
No, afraid not.
Northwest.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just one of those unavoidable impacts. The hawks are hunting that long stretch of low grass, that the prime habitat for little mice and voles, their favorite food. And they just have no sense of the speed of cars and trucks and buses. And they just, it's an unfortunate conflict. And, you know.
Nobody's trying to make an effort to discourage the hawks from getting into a certain area?
No, there's very little. If you stop and think about it, what can you do? You could put a sign up, but the hawks aren't going to pay attention to that. So, you know.
What about a net?
No.
You're going to say put a net over the North Way, Merle? What are you doing?
And that'll probably be a big problem for many of the daytime songbirds that are flying around out there that'll get tangled up or caught up and bounced in and boxed in by a net. So, nope. No sale there, Merrill.
Sorry, buddy. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Larry in Sheffield. Larry, you're up.
Yes. I used to raise grass-fed beef, and I would leave a 7-acre patch for late haymaking, and I can report that the bobolinks really enjoyed that. The Columbia Land Conservancy owns considerable amounts of land, and they require that the farmers not cut their hay until later, till the birds flesh. The real reason why I called is because I'm also a crow fan, and I don't see why Audubon or somebody couldn't build a rookery, a shed or something where crows could roost at the edge of a cornfield, so and try to have them come there instead of going into cities where they get harassed with explosions and whistles and all kinds of stuff. So I'd love to see a rookery built for crows.
Tough job. That's almost like putting the net up along the Northway, because the crows have been coming to these sites for generations after generations, of long before the cities came in, and they're like a game trail. They just keep following. That's why you see the deer crossing signs on the highway, because that's a traditional heritage trail, and the crows basically are going to where their GPS takes them.
Yeah, and I'm not really sure we would know how to attract the crows to a new roost site either. I mean, they're keying in on things, I think, that we're not really aware of.
So the app that you guys mentioned, Larry, thanks for the call. The app that you mentioned that makes the bird noises would not Merlin. Work. Crows are too smart for that?
Yeah.
They
crows
won't fall for that.
Smart. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Not in terms of a winter roost. They're right. Looking for more than just a familiar name.
Okay, let's go to Post and Kill. Linda, you're on. Hi, Linda. Linda has been holding for a while and fell asleep. One more chance. Hello, Linda. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Oh, splendid. It worked. Go ahead.
Okay, two questions. First, my husband saw bluebirds, male bluebirds, last week. There were four of them going into a birdhouse, trying to get into a birdhouse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do that this time of year. They'll sleep in the birdhouses in the winter just to stay warm. Yeah, so they will check them out.
So they weren't wanting to nest. It was just to, because these were all male birds.
Yeah, no, they were probably just trying to stay warm, yeah.
Sort of like an Airbnb for birds.
Yeah.
Okay, now, and my second question has to do with blue jays. They seem to pick at the paint on our outside the house.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, what is that about?
That I don't know. Sometimes insects are. I'm talking about little flying gnats and things like that. Will line up on the side of a house. If it's sunshine is warming it up, they'll use that. And I suspect they have no interest in paint. Paint okay, does well, not well, have any.
Maybe Linda painted her house in suet.
Well,
only this happens only in the winter, and there doesn't seem to be any insects or whatever you said.
Do other birds do it too, or just the bluebirds?
No, just blue, it seems to be the bluebirds.
Blue jays.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm going to suggest that there's on the siding there, there are probably some spider egg nests or these little webworms. Not harmful at all. These just happen to cling to a surface. And I'm going to go with that. It's all about food.
All right, Linda, thanks for the call. This email about crows from Sherry. I've wondered about this, too. Now that the leaves are off the trees, there are nests up high that look to be primarily made of leaves. What kind of nests are they? Squirrels? Crows? And why don't we ever see baby crows? And that's from Sherry.
They're squirrel nests, most likely.
Okay.
Crow nests are made of sticks. They're stick nests. And crows usually put their nests in the tops, in the crown of conifer trees. So your pine trees and whatnot. And once the crows... the crows, when they fledge, when they're old enough to leave the nest, they are the same size as an adult. They look like an adult except for the inside of their mouth. So if you end up seeing one and it's making lots of noise and there's like a group of birds and it's, you know, early summer, look inside the bill, and if it's a pink inside, then that's a young crow.
And they also have beautiful baby blue eyes.
Really? The crows do?
Yes, baby crows have blue eyes.
I don't know if I've ever been close enough to one to actually see the color of the eyes.
Check it out.
I know they come to your shoulder. I know. You've seen them. We've heard this. Let's go to Durham. And Paul, you're on.
Hi, guys. Sorry. I was eating a late lunch and I got snorfed in the middle of my sandwich.
Okay. I hope you can say that on the radio.
So, yes, I'm in Durham, and I'm on the edge of a pond. And for years, I have seen bald eagles here pretty frequently, a single eagle in a tree over the pond once a month, once every 2 months. In the past 2 weeks... though, I've seen something I haven't seen before, which is two bald eagles in that tree, sitting within a foot or two of each other, and they're there in the morning at the same time almost every day now for the past 2 weeks, and I'm wondering what's going on.
I've never seen
this before.
They like your pond. Well, here's the thing about that. Eagles, we have had such beautiful success with restoring the eagle population here in New York and the Northeast. And they've gotten to the point where all the good real estate has been taken, not to diminish the value of your yard, by the way, but all the good spots are taken, and they're looking around for next best low-rent district. And your yard's there.
Yeah, what you'll want to keep an eye out for in the next couple months is to see if you see them carrying sticks around, and that will indicate that they're trying to set up a nest nearby.
Eagles.
So by that, you're suggesting that they definitely that this is a pair.
It sounds, if they're sitting that close together, then most likely they're a pair.
Yeah, and for Atlas Project's purposes, I would call that a probable pair for nesting purposes.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Good.
Well, thanks for the call, Paul. We appreciate it very much. By the way, Lynn wrote in from Berkshire County. I had blue jays eating the paint from my fence and was told they need the calcium in the paint. Is that possible?
It's very possible. If they're doing that, break up some eggshells and toss it out. It's a lot better for them.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And now we go to Salt Point, New York. Johanna, you're on.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
My question's about white-throated sparrows. And I love their song, but what I notice is in the springtime, it sounds like their song isn't its usual. It sounds almost like they're trying to get it right, but
practicing
just can't quite get it. Yeah, as if they're practicing, and it's not for like a month or two until they seem to get their usual song back. And I wonder, I notice it every year. I wonder if I'm imagining it or... You know, it just makes me laugh. I love hearing it.
I think they forgot the words over the winter. They just have to bring them back.
So, there's a number of birds that sound a little bit rough in the spring, and they're trying to get back in the swing of things.
Get their pipes up.
So it literally is practice.
Yeah, to some extent, and it could be the young of the year, their first year, first spring, and again, they have to work on it. Yes, practices.
Can birds, and I'm not joking, be in tune? In other words, if the white-throated sparrow was singing a song properly, is it always in the same pitch range?
Yes and no. There's a lot of individual variation in the bird songs between individuals and certainly between regions. A white-throated sparrow from eastern Canada may sound different, and especially true with the white-crowned sparrow and the song sparrow and the savannah sparrow. There are a lot of regional variations over the wide range of these bird species. So, and sometimes, the local song sparrow... The local song sparrows each seem to have their own variation to the theme, but they're recognizable because of a pattern that they follow.
Well, let's go to Johanna. Thanks for the call. Let's go now to New Hamburg, New York. And Peter, you're on.
Hey, how are you? How are you guys?
Pretty good.
It's great. Great listening to this show. I don't have a question, really, but yesterday... I was out in the backyard with my girlfriend, and we were. I live in an old, really huge, old stone house that was built in 1798.
Yeah.
And I heard my girlfriend gasp. Ah. She was coming out of the back door, and she looked down at her feet, and there was a cedar waxwing lying on the ground at her feet. And she picked it up. It was still alive. And it was warm, and it was still alive. I held it for a second. It was warm. And then it died in her hands. And it was really, really sad. And we couldn't... she blamed it on herself.
Oh.
But she didn't do anything. She didn't step on it or anything like that. My feeling was that it might have flown into the window that's on the second floor above that door.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it might have flown into that window and broken its neck, Rick?
Well, yes. Even before you mentioned the upper window, that's usually the case, the cause for these fatalities, which is really, really unfortunate, beautiful cedar waxwing. And again,
beautiful. I took photographs of it. It was just incredibly beautiful.
Yeah. And I always enjoy finding cedar wax wings out there in the wild, and I just assume they stay there. But you can, again, go to American Bird Conservancy website and look for measures to prevent this sort of thing from happening.
Well, I guess we're about done. Julie Hart, if people want to find out about the Breeding Bird Atlas, how do they do that?
They would visit ebird.org/atlasny.
Okay, fair enough. Rich Guthrie, if anyone wants to follow your doings,
my email address.
Oh yeah,
more than welcome.
You're inviting people to email.
Absolutely.
All right.
And I apologize to some of those who I didn't get to. They could fall down the list. Send it back again. Let me try again. It's richardpguthrie@gmail.com.
How do you spell Guthrie?
G-U-T-H-R-I-E.
All right. Well, thank you both for being here today. We'll see you again in the new year. Support comes from the Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting oil paintings by Winslow Homer and American artists including Chase, Tarbell, and Innes in the original art gallery through December 30th. ArkellMuseum.org. At Vision XL, Lake Katrine, continuing a commitment to patient care, working to provide optical products and techniques while adhering to safety protocols. Appointments at 845-336-6310. It's pretty clear if you've listened to the show, English is my second language, and I don't have a first one. Thanks again to Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Ed Rosen screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on the show, we travel. Gene Gagnon will be back to take your calls at 2:00.